Call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. We're going to start out today with a work session on Senate Bill 563. Dave?
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. Senate Bill 563 directs all deposits of interest on late payment of property taxes to the CAFA account, County Assessment Function Funding Assistance. The bill applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2009. The original bill had 2013 with -2 amendment. It moves date back up to 2009. With the package, you have revenue and fiscal statements. And the only difference between -1 and -2 is -2 has all the elements in -1, but changed the starting tax years from 2013 to 2009.
Okay, and refresh me why we did that.
The original bill was written in anticipation of just the ending of timber money. Mm-hmm. But the starting date has changed, so in consideration of just lack of funding for CAFA.
So the initial bill was written assuming timber money would be available.
Wouldn't be available. By the time, by 2013, the timber money would completely unavailable. Uh-huh. On the other hand,
okay, I think we need some help on this to understand why we went to 2009. So let's call Gil. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. Bill was introduced at the request of AOC, and we'd asked for a normal effective date, and somehow the drafting did not show that. So what you received as the original bill was, in our opinion, incorrectly. It was not according to our request.
Okay, the 2013.
Yes.
And then the dash ones moved it to, what did the dash ones, I don't have dash ones in front of me here.
Madam Chair, as I recall, the dash ones fixed the technical problems that were involved in implementation that the Department of Revenue brought to you.
Oh, but didn't fix the date.
So okay. We needed to go back a second time.
Okay, so it was always your intention to do 2008.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's true.
Okay, and do you have any other developments to share with the committee?
I do indeed, thank you. Bumpy ride. Just to give you a brief rundown in terms of the last time we spoke about this bill, the last time you scheduled a work session, a little bit of information about the internal organization and policy direction of the Association of Counties. There's 118 judges and commissioners. We have a normal policy committee called the Legislative Committee, which meets monthly. And it's made up of 58 individuals, judges, commissioners, and representatives of elected officials, such as assessors, sheriffs, DAs, so on. Between the meetings of the Legislative Committee, there's a smaller group made up of 11 commissioners and judges called the Special Operations Committee, and they meet as needed on hot items. Well, the issue of House Bill 3214 became a very hot internal item. It was the Jackson County bill that would have, in effect, charged a fee for service on assessment of taxation. There was a hearing in the House on that bill. On April 20th, our Special Operations Committee met and decided to withhold support for that bill. On a week later, on April 27th, the Special Operations Committee met again in a telephone conference. There were 7 members present, and on a 5-2 vote, decided to support both bills, 563 and 3214. after having been advised of the consequences. The result was it disrupted the agreement that, or at least an understanding that the direct recipients of property taxes had about this concept that came from a work group that was organized by the Department of Revenue in late 07, early 08. This was one of two or three items that we could all agree on. And I must say, for the record, the Oregon Education Association was not part of that work group, but OSBA, COSA, and community colleges, cities, counties, and special districts were. It was also before the economic downturn. Our regular policy direction committee, the legislative committee, met on May 11th, and diplomatically but sharply changed direction. And AOC is now opposed to House Bill 3214, overwhelming vote. So we took to heart the admonition from the last work session on this bill.
Thank you for putting that on the record. Committee, does anyone have any questions of Mr. Riddell? Thank you. It has been a very strange ride here, but I'm glad things are working out. Committee, we have, in addition to the -2 amendments, there is a -3 set of amendments out there that would require the assessors to show maintenance of effort with their existing funding before, you know, in exchange for getting these additional funds. I like that amendment and will ask my counterpart on the House side to consider it seriously when this bill gets to the House, but I don't want to hold this bill up today. So Senator Morris?
May I ask a clarifying question?
You can.
On the original measure summary, it referenced that the CAFA fund covers about 22% of the total cost of for the county assessment and taxation function, and that reference was not included in the current measure summary, nor did I see it in the revenue summary. And I'm wondering, has something changed?
Day, you did the summary, so what's the story there?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, there's no change. Just I wanted to just revise reflective of what is needed in step measure summary. So between then and now, there's nothing changed.
Okay. So we're still the current formula does not adequately address the cost of production.
That's correct, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your hawkeye on that one, Senator Morris. Any other questions or comments before we move along? Okay, we are in work session and we have a -2 amendment. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 563.
Senator Morris has moved the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 563. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 563 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved Senate Bill 563 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Nice work, everyone, and I will carry this bill. Okay, now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2068.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2068A does three things, two of them clarifying existing statute and one of them making a modification. The first clarification is pertaining to certain tax credits, four of them, the biomass producer credit, the business energy tax credit, the credit for contributions to the Oregon Production Investment Fund, and diesel engine repower and retrofit credit. Clarifies that the credits may only be transferred to C-Corps, S-Corps, or personal income taxpayers. The second clarification is that is for existing credits, income, and corporate excise tax credits, saying that if they're transferred, if they're transferable, they may only be transferred once unless statute specifically states otherwise. And then the third piece is that it modifies the transfer pricing mechanism for the BETC, for the business energy tax credit. Under current law, energy may update that the transfer price once a year through administrative rules process. What the bill would do here would be, through the administrative rules process, establish a formula for determining the transfer price that includes inflation projections and market real rate of return for kinds of investments, and then would direct the department to update, use that formula quarterly throughout the year and updating the price, the intent being to provide a little more market response to changing conditions.
Okay, what would what impact would that have? What's the percentage now, do you know, on how the discount on these credits when they're transferred? Maybe we'll get some testimony.
Yeah, I believe the Department of Energy is in the room.
Betty Merrill is signed up to testify. Okay. Is that Department of Energy? Yes, Department of Energy. Welcome.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Betty Merrill, Assistant Director for the Conservation Division for the Oregon Department of Energy. The Business Energy Tax Credit currently is for a conservation project is a 35% credit. If it is a one-year tax credit, it would be at a rate of 30.5%. If it is a five-year credit, it would be at a rate of 25.5%. If it's a renewable energy tax credit, at a 50% credit, the one-year pass-through rate would be 40%, and the five-year rate would be 33.5%.
Okay, so if you had a tax credit worth $1 million, it would be, and you sold it to somebody, then the price you would get for it would be what?
So can I use $100,000?
Yes, use $100,000.
On a $100,000 tax credit for an energy conservation project, the tax credit would be $35,000, and the pass-through payment to the project owner would be $25,500.
Okay, great. That's what we're looking for. And what will the impact on the ground be of this? How would this affect by having this kind of rolling analysis of market conditions? What kind of effect would you anticipate?
Setting the BETC rate is a balancing act as to what market rate conditions would be and what the purchasers are willing to pay. When we initially set the rate back in 2002, we set the rate on a 35% tax credit at 28.5%, and we really had very few pass-through partners. When we went back and reevaluated the rates and lowered them, we had many more pass-through partners. However, the pass-through partner market has changed dramatically over the years, from a few companies who wanted to be sponsors to banking industry and now to individual taxpayers. So the marketplace has changed dramatically in terms of who is purchasing the tax credits. An impact of changing the tax credit pass-through amount would be a little bit of uncertainty for the project owner. I believe the rate would increase under current market conditions so that the project owner would be receiving more money. However, you've got to balance that and what is the market willing to pay. So it's kind of a balancing act. Right now, there'd be no revenue impact to the state. We're just trying to maintain a robust partnership out there willing to buy these and partners getting projects done.
And so there's nothing in our current law or this bill that would require people who receive the BETC tax credit to sell it. In other words, if they didn't like the rate that it was being sold at, there's nothing to require them to sell it.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay. All right. Any questions from my committee of one, Senator Morris? Oh, two.
She snuck in.
My committee has gotten very spoiled. We had a couple Mondays off, and now, you know, we can't drag them in. So, Thank you for coming, Senator Rosenbaum, who I understand you were testifying. I hope your bill passed.
Not yet, but hopefully okay. So.
All right. Any questions from my two committee members? Okay. Thank you very much. Anything else to add? Okay.
Thank you.
Nobody else has signed up. Does anybody else want to talk on this? Deborah Buchanan wants to talk on this. You can just stay there if you want, since you all are the only folks up here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. The bill that's before you, as amended, grew out of some work during the interim that the department did with the House Interim Revenue Committee. We had identified some issues and some ambiguities with the sale or transfer of tax credits and to whom they may be sold or transferred, and had originally thought that perhaps we could come up with a standard method of transferring credits that would apply to all credits that you allow to be transferred. And when we actually got into the weeds of that, found that to be more difficult than had been expected. So what you have here is, as your staff pointed out, for our purposes, is clarifying our current interpretation of what the law says regarding the transfer of credits, and that is that credits may only be transferred once. A subsequent transfer is not allowed under the law, and that the credits may not be transferred to entities that are not taxpayers. And so that ends up being C corporations, S corporations, or personal income taxpayers. Questions that we had from taxpayers with credits were whether or not the credits could be sold or transferred to partnerships and then distributed out to partners. And our attorneys looked at the words in the statutes and said because it says it can be transferred to a taxpayer, that would not include a partnership because a partnership itself is not a taxpayer. So what you have in the bill in regards to those two points are clarifying our interpretation of what the statute has meant.
Okay. So this basically simplifies it, and it keeps us from having an industry build up around these tax credits, which I think some of us were a little concerned about happening. And you said that you couldn't do all the tax credits. What are some of the ones left out there that you couldn't pull this off with?
Madam Chair, the ones that are not included in this bill are ones that we think are clear enough in the language now that the standards are established. And there was concern in the House Revenue Committee about including them here and maybe having unintended consequences for those that are working well enough. One of those, for example, is farm worker housing construction, and the language there is pretty clear as to who can transfer it and to whom it may be transferred. So that's not included in this particular provision.
But the ones that aren't included here, generally, are most or all of them limited to one transfer?
Madam Chair, our interpretation so far has been that all credits are limited to one transfer. Okay. So even though they are not listed specifically in House Bill 2068, that is how we have administered the programs or the tax credits transfer.
Okay, I think it's mainly come up with the Betsy anyway. Senator Telford, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize if you've answered this and I missed it. But I dashed back here as fast as I could.
Did your bill pass?
I left. I had to get back here. Oh. I knew I had. My chair is cracking the whip. I needed to get back. The question I have is, I thought you said partnerships weren't included because the tax is paid at the partner level. It's a pass-through.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
And if that be the case, why include S corporations?
Madam Chair, Senator Telford, the question is, most of the tax credits, or at least those that are in this bill, provide that the credit may be transferred to a taxpayer. So then the question was, what is a taxpayer under Oregon law? And in looking at that, the our legal advice was that partnerships are not considered taxpayers, but an S corporation is considered a taxpayer. It's subject to the excise tax if it's doing business in Oregon, even though generally the income of the S corporation is passed through to the shareholders. It still did meet the definition of taxpayer.
Okay, so follow up. So the clarification is we're going by statute's definition of taxpayer, which does include the pass-through S corporations and the subsequent shareholders of that.
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, for this purpose, we are saying that taxpayer, as we have implemented the credits, includes S corporations, but it does not include partnerships.
But it does include C corporations.
Yes, Madam Chair.
So basically, the benefits for either one of those would be distributed to the shareholders.
Madam Chair, the C corporation actually is taxed at the entity level, so any credit that a C corporation purchases could offset the C corporation tax. The S corporation, although it pays the $10 minimum tax, passes its income through to the shareholders.
Oh, I see. So the shareholders get the benefit of the credit, even if there's a bunch of them?
Yes, Madam Chair.
That's my question on the partnership.
Yeah. As an accountant, is that doable? I mean, is that...
Yes. Things are passed through to all the individual shareholders. Well, you can't have more than, let's say, 100 shareholders. Otherwise, you don't qualify to be an S corporation. So it's a lot of K-1s, yeah. And if you have a $10,000 tax credit, it's chopped up into lots of little pieces. But because it's a pass-through for income tax purposes, the excise tax is paid at the corporate level, but the income tax is paid at the shareholder level. That's why I question why a partnership is not, because the income tax is paid at the partner level, similar to a S corporation shareholder.
Okay. Learn something new every day in this committee. Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you. We've got a fiscal and a revenue and everything we need on this and no amendments. Would everybody be comfortable sending this along, or did you want a little time to look? All right, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2068 and open a work session on House Bill 2068. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2068 to the floor with a do-fast recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2068 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Would anybody like to carry this? Senator Morris, would you like to carry it?
Okay.
Good. Okay. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2014. Really working the whole staff today. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House Bill 2014A deals with the school district construction tax. As you recall, the legislature allowed school districts to collect the construction tax last session. This is deals with some of the problems that have arisen with the implementation of that language. It would allow, or if a state agency or official issues a building permit, and it would require that agency or individual collect the construction tax. It was not known last session that the state even was in that business in a few areas of the state. It adds two exemptions to the tax, the nonprofit long-term and residential care facilities and the nonprofit continuing care retirement communities to the list that was already exempt. It increases the maximum administration fee that can be charged from 1% to 4% of tax revenue. And it would also allow 0.25% within that 4% to be charged by the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Only during the 2009-11 biennium, and that I think is to pay for some computer programming changes that may be necessary for them. And then it clarifies that the collection is to be at the time the permit is issued to increase square footage. That avoids some problems with other permits being issued for other purposes. And it would apply to construction taxes on or after the effective date, which is the 91st day after sine die.
Thank you. Why don't David Williams and Gil Riddell come up together? Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association. Want to first off thank you all for hearing House Bill 2014 and hopefully giving it favorable consideration today. The bill, as accurately described by committee staff, makes several technical amendments to statute that you passed last legislative session, which was Senate Bill 1036, creating the school construction excise tax. And I did just want to take a few moments just to go back to that bill briefly, just to remind everybody of sort of the scope of what we're talking about. We were very happy that that bill received favorable consideration last session to allow districts to recoup some of the cost that growth places on district infrastructure. When you have new development in a school district, it places new demand on school infrastructure, and districts currently had no way other than through general obligation debt mechanisms to recoup some of that cost. This arose out of a long-standing debate about the role of system development charges in school construction, and of course schools do not have an ability to charge SDCs, and thus we have the bill. What the legislation did last session is it gave districts an ability within a maximum amount, $1 per square foot on residential, 50 cents a square foot on non-residential, to assess new square footage in a community. That would be the ceiling, if you will, and then it set a minimum for certain exemptions and other standards within that. There were exemptions for public construction, affordable housing, hospitals, and some other things in that legislation. So really the bill set the statutory ceiling and floor for allowing districts to assess that. But it also, as in my conversation with districts, and I've made individual presentations on just this bill to probably a dozen school districts and, of course, to large audiences of districts as well. My first bullet point that I like to tell people about was this was really the first time in well over 100 years that the legislature has returned a taxing authority to school districts, gave local boards, locally elected officials, the prerogative to decide whether or not this type of tax was appropriate for their jurisdiction. These are people who stand for election a la all of you and are thus accountable to that. In the time span since the law has been effective, we've had about 50 school districts come on board and adopted the construction excise tax and are currently collecting revenues based on that. Our estimation is the revenues raised have been in the $4 to $5 million range in the, I think we're at about 18 months that the legislation has been effective. The districts range all over the place from Portland, Beaverton, North Clackamas to little districts like Cove and Gaston and Silver Falls. So there really is a broad spectrum of districts that have really decided that this does best fit the needs of their local district. But that implementation over that 18 months has not been without some new issues that have arisen, much as would happen in any new type of program. Thus, you have House Bill 2014. Probably the biggest hurdle in adopting this tax for a local jurisdiction has been in the conversation with their local governments. There have been some instances where districts have had significant pushback from their community. Some have decided not to go forward with it for those reasons. Others have got together with their community and helped them to understand the value and have moved forward as well. But as part of the legislation, school districts who are not in the business of collecting taxes are required to negotiate with cities and counties over the collection of the construction excise tax because the natural nexus is obviously at the point at which the building permit is issued. That's the point at which the tax is best to be paid. And while we understand that there are those times when logistical hurdles may arise and legitimate negotiations need to take place over the collections of the tax, there have been a number of instances where we felt it was that there have been an inappropriate, shall we say, veto type of power exercised by the city or the county in believing that the tax was inappropriate and therefore refusing to negotiate or collect on behalf of the school district. I have attached in my testimony letters from business managers from two school districts in particular, the Greater Albany School District and the Roseburg School District, where they did face particular confrontation with their local jurisdictions. But I don't want to leave them aside. I didn't get around to copying it, but just last month, the Kaiser City Council, before the school district had even decided to adopt this tax, the Kaiser City Council voted simply to oppose it outright. Again, we think asserting inappropriate prerogative on behalf of those local jurisdictions over something that is reasonably and solely the authority of the school district. And so we bring 2014 to try to remedy some of those issues, clarify where collections should take place. We think negotiations with the cities and counties should accurately take place over collections responsibilities and duties, but we should be under in no means required to negotiate with a city or county over whether or not collections takes place at all. And I would urge you all to vote yes on 2014, and would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, so tell us how this works. Well, maybe we'll wait till Gil testifies. You might be answering.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. AOC also urges you to pass this bill. Counties believe in fostering local partnerships and cooperation. In fact, 10 and soon 11 counties do collect these CETs in spite of having to pay for most of the administrative costs. We're glad that the negotiated intergovernmental agreement feature is retained in the program. The local IGAs permit the local jurisdictions to directly negotiate on details of collection in terms of the cost and efficiency of that. There are issues that are local in nature that can be worked out locally. For example, what is the design of the CET within one collecting jurisdiction? If more than one school district adopts a CET within a jurisdiction, yet there are different designs, it complicates collections. What about credit card fees and bounce checks? What about startup costs when software programming must be changed? And identifying properties in which the CET applies. Comment from one county about a couple of rural school districts that it's been very difficult to identify the particular properties to which the particular CETs apply. So with that, good bill should pass. We approve it.
Okay, thank you. So help me understand how this, you know, this requires them to negotiate, but what if they still just don't like it? I mean, how do you make them reach agreement?
Madam Chair, the bill changes the may in terms of collections to shall.
Okay.
As a sweetener, it does raise the administrative fee from 1% to 4%, which is much more in line with the actual costs that at least the counties are experiencing.
Was it your perception before that maybe the reason they some of them did oppose, did refuse to collect was because they were being underpaid? Was that your...
Madam Chair, I have two instances of counties, and David mentioned both. I think there are more cities involved than counties, but that's fair. The two counties each have a story. One is Douglas County, and the 1% they saw as an underfunded mandate and were not in position to help at that point. The other was Linn County. Linn County had an local economic stimulus idea where they would not charge for building permits for a certain period of time. It ended at the end of April. And the school district came in and said, we want fee for building permits, and the county said, well, for this period we're not doing that, and so there was an impasse.
Okay.
this bill would resolve that.
Okay. Other questions from the committee? Senator Telford.
Madam Chair, thank you. I want to get some clarity on this fee increase. Obviously it was underestimated at the legislation level when this bill was enacted last session, or maybe not. I don't know. I also know that it's pretty easy for the building department to just collect the fee and cover their costs. Obviously, that impacts a house. But, you know, somebody buying a house, you know, these days we're looking for affordable housing, et cetera. We're just passing this fee on. This is just another fee being passed on to the ultimate consumer. On a house that's about, let's say, a $250,000 house, what kind of a fee increase are we talking about here?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, the administrative fee to be paid to the city and county is going from a 1% to a 4%, and that's paid out of the proceeds of the construction excise tax. The assessment of the construction excise tax is not, the assessment to the individual builder is not changing under this scenario.
Oh, okay.
And this was worked out in cooperation
right.
with
Thank
the
you for that piece of clarification.
Yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chair, just to add, I did add in my written testimony, I have a couple of other pieces just for background, lest anybody wanted more information about this bill. I've got a summary of the Senate Bill 1036 from last time, as well as the Oregon School Boards Association, in our effort to serve school district, produced an implementation toolkit for district boards to use when going through implementing this tax, and I've included most of the components in your handout. The only thing I did not include was a sample intergovernmental agreement, since those are quite thick, but can be easily downloaded from the website if anybody was interested.
We will race out to do so.
I'm sure you will.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Anybody else want to talk on this? Okay. Public hearing on House Bill 2014. And again, committee, I think I'm ready to go on this. If anybody wants to hold it, we can do it, but otherwise we'll send it along. Okay, open a work session on House Bill 2014. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2014 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That's House Bill 2014A.
Correct. Senator Morris has moved House Bill 2014A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. If there are any discussion, any objection, so ordered. Senator Telfer, would you like to carry this?
Certainly.
And committee, that completes our agenda. And for the record, there will probably be no more Mondays off.
Except for
next Monday when our hand got forced on us. So we will not be in the building next Monday. If we were going to be in the building, we would be in this committee. So with that, we are adjourned.